Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab. Adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good morning, everyone. And poor Harvey Weinstein. Since October of last year, so many women have accused him of sexual harassment or sexual assault. The New York Times, which broke the original story on him, counts more than 80 women. Poor Harvey Weinstein is having a very tough year. Today's news includes word of a poor me email that the movie mogul sent to a list of recipients on Monday. It reportedly starts with the words, "I've had one hell of a year, the worst nightmare of my life." There's no word in the email about what kind of year any of the 80-something women have had. Weinstein is currently on trial here in New York for several of those alleged incidents. The Times puts the email in its apparent strategic context by saying, for several months, Mr. Weinstein's lawyers have waged a campaign to discredit his accusers and weaken the sexual assault case brought in May by the Manhattan District Attorney's Office. Now, maybe it's not a surprise that a defendant is doing what he can to defend himself, and he has that right, but the discrediting and the poor me campaign stands in stark contrast to the statement Weinstein gave the Times in their original report in October of last year. At that time, he said, quote, "I appreciate the way I've behaved with colleagues in the past has caused a lot of pain, and I sincerely apologize for it. Though I'm trying to do better, I know I have a long way to go." Now, in addition to the 80-plus accusers, the Times says dozens of Weinstein's former and current employees, from assistants to top executives, said they knew of inappropriate conduct while they worked for him. That was in the original story. But apparently Me Too has given way to poor me for Harvey Weinstein this week as he looks to beat the rep. One more line from the Times original story. Across the years and continents, accounts of Mr. Weinstein's conduct share a common narrative. Women reported to a hotel for what they thought were work reasons, only to discover that Mr. Weinstein, who has been married for most of 3 decades, sometimes seemed to have different interests. And that brings us to our first guests. Bloomberg News reporters Gillian Tan and Katia Porzakansky have an article out now noting that Wall Street has so far avoided a mega scandal like the one that's engulfed Harvey Weinstein. But ironically, they report, women's careers in the finance sector may be suffering as a result. The reason? The mostly male top dogs on the street may be following the Mike Pence rule. Avoid women whenever you can. Bloomberg News reporters Gillian Tan and Katia Porzakansky join me now with their story. We'll also touch on the other big Wall Street story this morning, the arrest of a top Chinese tech executive in Canada at the request of the Trump administration, just as Trump is already sending stock values into turmoil this week by confusing everyone about whether there's a trade deal with China or whether he just made that up over the weekend, like he makes up so many things. Gillian and Katia, thanks so much for coming on. Welcome to WNYC. So the first line of your article is, no more dinner with female colleagues. Don't sit next to them on flights. Book hotel rooms on different floors. Avoid one-on-one meetings. So flesh that out for us, whoever wants to start. What's going on?
Sure. So we spoke with several dozen people on Wall Street in all sorts of ranks. The story idea kind of came by accident because it's just kind of things that we have to talk to sources to do our jobs. We're both Wall Street reporters, and we have to talk to, of course, many men. And you just have been able to see a shift in behavior. And so then we started to think, well, hey, maybe there's a broader thing going on. And this isn't just this isn't just the financial industry. This is across many industries, and it's been reported in many different industries. Of course, in the financial world, you have a big gap between men and women in the higher ranks. And so if we decided to talk to men about this and see what was going on, and it's kind of an individual policy that several men have adopted, where they're being more apprehensive about their professional relationships. And of course, this, you know, as you know, we talk about in the story, and I'm sure we're going to get into, this could have a damaging externality on the careers of their female counterparts.
And we will definitely get into that. Just remind everybody for context, why do you describe this as the Mike Pence effect?
Jill?
Yeah, sure. So I guess it's after U.S. Vice President Mike Pence, who has said that he avoids dining alone with any woman other than his wife. So this is just almost an exact sort of replication of that approach to how some Wall Street men are dealing with their female colleagues.
And so this makes life even harder for women, as you describe in the story, though it's, you know, that's going to be obvious to many listeners as to why, but take us down that path a little bit. How does it make it harder for women to advance in their careers if men are being careful not to harass them or risk being seen as harassing them, which is, from the men's point of view, their motivation?
Well, the actual impact of what's going on, right, isn't so much that the men are afraid to harass. I mean, they shouldn't be harassing women, right? They're concerned more about the perception, or that they may be even given a false accusation. And that's where, you know, it's more of a protectionist policy instead of a respectfulness policy. And if everyone could just focus on being respectful and understanding what are boundaries and what are appropriate steps to take and relationships to have in business, then, you know, that's a different story, right? That's what they should be doing, but instead they're icing them out. When you ice out, right, and you have a potential deepening of the gender imbalance. Let's give an example, right? Let's say there's a senior executive, he's a man, and he has a team of 10 people, and seven are men and three are women. But he used to have team drinks, but now he only takes the men out to drinks and instead leaves the relationships with the women for during the business hours, just has open door coffee with them. And what ends up happening? We all know that a lot more information is shared and relationships are developed in a less official capacities, right? When you're out to drinks, you actually can get one-on-one time with people. You can develop your professional mentorship relationships a little bit better. And if women are just left out of those instances, then they're going to be not top of mind anymore. They're not going to be at the top of that manager's mind when he thinks about who am I going to promote, who am I going to bring onto this project. And that's where the deepening and the chasm just widens between the men and the women for the next generation of leaders.
And with Jillian Tan and Katia Porzakansky from Bloomberg News, listeners, help us report this story. Men or women who work or have worked on Wall Street, or really for people from any workplace or industry, men, have you or has anyone you know changed their behavior with respect to meeting with or mentoring or having any kind of professional interactions with women in your workplace as a result of the Me Too movement? 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. And women, have you seen men doing this? And if so, how much do you feel Me Too has made things better for you at work, or for other women you know, versus how much might it be hurting you or others, as our guest suggests is happening in some cases, because men in power aren't including women in professional/social gatherings to protect themselves from risk. 212-433-WNYC. Help us report this story. 212-433-9692. Jillian, how does the balance of male to female executives in Wall Street firms in particular become a factor in this, maybe more than in other industries?
Yeah, so this is one thing that we highlighted that is a reason mentorship can or may become a problem if the approach that some men are taking sort of proliferates. From Mercer data that was produced in 2016, we can see at the very top rank on Wall Street, the executive level, men occupy 85% of those roles and women occupy 15%. And we spoke to one senior woman who sort of acknowledged that she wouldn't be where she is today if another senior man hadn't sort of pulled her up the ranks. And she points out, as this data does as well, that there just simply aren't enough women to pull up other junior women.
So there aren't enough women mentors to go around for young women in the industry. What does mentoring look like on Wall Street? Can you describe, either of you, a little bit how an older investment firm worker typically mentors a younger one?
I mean, I think that it's kind of what we already described. And of course, everyone has different techniques and different jobs require, you know, different things. But there are very many different types of jobs on Wall Street. But Wall Street is a big networking industry, right? I mean, we like to say, okay, it's the numbers and modeling and spreadsheets and all that kind of thing. But it's really about networking and relationships between clients and, you know, and their service providers, but internally in a firm. You know, some of these major firms have hundreds of thousands of employees, right? The biggest banks on Wall Street are some of the biggest companies out there. They, you know, to get around and to find opportunities, you need to be in the know, and you need to have people thinking about you. You have to be top of mind because it's a very competitive landscape. So, you know, if you're being left out of these talks, of these meetings, of these mentorship opportunities, you're just going to slide backward in time. And, you know, I think it's important to note that this isn't necessarily because, you know, I wouldn't characterize this as a downside of Me Too. I mean, at the Me Too movement, the point of it was to get victims recognized and victims supporting each other and saying, you know, this harassment, abuse, assault, and rape of women is happening, and it's been hiding, and that nobody is, and these people haven't been brought to justice. Unfortunately, it's ironic, and actually, as the deputy mayor of New York City wrote a letter yesterday to us, saying it's ironic and sickening that the response is to say, "Hey, now the man is the victim. The men are the ones that are going to be victimized of this." When at the end of the day, this is still a woman's story about getting recognition and about being treated as equals. And so it's horrible that the backlash that there's this backlash that's going to victimize women even further.
Let's take a phone call. Trey in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Trey, thanks so much for calling in today.
Hi, Brian. I work for one of the banks, and like any opening or closing the stores, like I pretty much opening or closing the bank, I pretty much like avoid or, you know, try not to open it with like another like female, because like I don't want like anyone to like, you know, accuse me of anything. And it's not like I'm not trying to say that they will, but you know, anything can happen. And just one other quick thing, like I drive for Uber sometimes, mm-hmm. and this one night this girl was like drunk. So I help her to her door, and I literally stop at the door. I'm like, I'm not going in there. I'm like, good night, bye.
Is your behavior at the bank different than before the Me Too movement broke out?
Oh, yes, it is. I mean, before that, we used to have like conversations at the bank. People used to tell me like, you know, oh, this is going on with my boyfriend or my husband. Now I'm like, okay, I go over there now.
Is there any, in your opinion, potential risk to any of your female colleagues' careers? I mean, you're just talking about opening and closing a door, it sounds like, in particular. But any risk that you could perceive to their advancement from the way that you're protecting yourself?
Hello, can you? Hello?
Yes. Did you hear the question?
No, not quite.
Like, if you're not including women, and even that simple act of just opening the bank or locking up at night, if I'm understanding you correctly, does it go along with a larger thing that you think might disadvantage their careers in any way?
Well, it's not that. It's like two people being like in the bank together, like a man and a woman. Mm-hmm. Like if there was another person there, that's fine with me. But it's like any type of, you know, if I go into a room and the door is locked behind me and there's just two people in there, me and another woman, it's like that is a situation that I try to avoid. If there's a third person, then, you know, that's fine.
Mm-hmm. Trey, thank you so much. I really appreciate it. And I'm going to go on to another caller right away. Barbara in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hi, Barbara.
Hi, how are you?
Good. You worked on Wall Street, I see.
I did. I worked from the early 1980s through the late 2000s.
Uh-huh.
My experience dovetailed what you've been talking about. It's interesting because it's something I've been saying for years. In the 80s, throughout the 80s, we saw very inappropriate behavior by the men on the trading floor. There were strippers and Playboy calendars, inappropriate comments about the women on the floor. And then we had the Anita Hill hearings, and we had a number of sexual harassment seminars throughout the firm with slides, et cetera, people coming in to talk about it. After that, and this was obviously well before the Me Too movement, behavior changed after that.
Mm-hmm.
And you actually saw fewer women on the trading floor, working on the trading floor. I assumed it was because fewer were hired. We were excluded from certain events like dinners, conferences that were held out of town. Behavior definitely changed. But I also think it was to the detriment of women because, as I said, there were fewer women.
Mm-hmm.
I had fewer women colleagues and was invited out where I was invited out before when they could behave however they wanted. I was excluded after that. And this is going back 25 years ago. So it's, in my opinion, it's not really a new thing.
What's the solution in your long experience on Wall Street? Is there a set of best practices to avoid the harassment but also avoid the exclusion?
Well, I've always said this to my female coworkers that it's a trade-off because before, you know, if you could put up with the inappropriate behavior, you were treated better, you were included. Unfortunately, Wall Street is a very testosterone-heavy place of business,
yes.
And
mm-hmm.
It was then, and it still is. And I think it requires a very conscious effort on the part of the men that work there to want to change their behavior in the presence of women. And it might be different now. I've been gone about 10 years. But they didn't seem to want to change their behavior. They just they said, "Well, we're not going to change our behavior. We'll just do it privately with women included."
Without women included, Barbara. Thank you so much for your call. I really appreciate it. So, Jillian Tan and Cuddy Porzakansky from Bloomberg News, who wrote about how things like Barbara was just describing are going on Wall Street and by extension in other businesses. Other industries since the Me Too movement broke out last October. Jillian and Katia, what were you thinking as you were listening to either of those two callers?
You know, I was thinking I was thinking about what Barbara was saying, and I think she really hit on an important point, which is, first of all, it's definitely not a new thing. I think these things get heightened, these reactions get heightened whenever there's something in the news to jar folks to act in a certain way. And of course, you know, we had the Kavanaugh hearings, which I think was also a big part of this. And I think she's absolutely right. Rather than adjusting their behavior and men adjusting their behavior and saying, I have to behave in a more appropriate way, they just would rather not have women around them and continue to behave as they always have. And one of the things that has been pointed out to us by an employment attorney that we spoke with for our story was that there is a big difference in how men and women see what is a professional behavior. And I think that's something where companies really need to start focusing and having discussions about, and not just one-off, you know, HR meetings, you know, do a little PowerPoint presentation and move on with your life, but actually start discussing this and about how women feel about the invasion of their space and how men may not realize that they're doing those things, or how women feel about certain types of jokes and how men, it may not even occur to them that they're offending their counterparts. And so maybe the divide is a lot smaller than we think if we start addressing that it exists.
We have an employment attorney calling in, it looks like. So let's talk to Alan in Kensington. Alan, you're on WNYC. Hi.
Hi. Brian, wonderful guests and callers. In what I'll call the old days, had numerous cases against investment banks on Wall Street where most horrible things have happened. And both, you know, in terms of gross behavior and in terms of controlling the advancement or lack of it against women. However, it seems to me, I almost want to call out an 800 number for a lawyer for employment discrimination, because if either an individual at an institution or an institution itself adopts a policy which effectively keeps a group of people from advancing, whether it's something as simple as not going out to a dinner where you would do it with a male colleague, that's a difference in a practice. And if that kind of practice has an effect, which obviously it does, that's a form of discrimination. And so could you possibly imagine somebody saying, well, I wouldn't go out to dinner alone in the evening with an African-American colleague? Or, you know, I mean, you know, it would be so blatant, right, and discriminatory. So I think it's certainly discriminatory. I think also, you know, you had the fellow who was worked at a bank and also sometimes drives Uber.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a technology difference from something which didn't really exist so much 20 or 30 years ago, and that is video. In a case like his, you know, even taxi drivers and Uber drivers, for the most part, have videos. If somebody was drunk in the back of their car, that would be shown. Now, he didn't want to walk that person into the building, but what would be obvious is some evidence that the person's drunk. There's, you know, similarly in terms of discrimination, whether, you know, there's, let's face it, in it's ubiquitous that there's video in major kinds of offices and institutions.
Yeah. Well, sometimes there is, sometimes there isn't. But I think you're reinforcing a line in Katya and Jillian's article in Bloomberg News that quoted another employment lawyer who specifically warned companies that if this Mike Pence strategy, if you will, really takes hold at a place, men are going to avoid sexual harassment complaints but back themselves right into sex discrimination complaints. That's what you're saying, right?
Yeah. I mean, you know, the saying of keep your, schmeckle in your pants can be taken to the next step. Keep your schmeckle in your head, in your pants. And that's really where it's about. It's not merely about, you know, something as overt as, you know, as what used to go on, but it's about the fact that we, you know, we need to be treated in a non-discriminatory way. And, you know, when your guest was talking about training, you know, about, you know, these slide trainings, you know, I myself have gone through those kinds of things, and they're so ineffective. And companies, if they really want to do something, they really have to make a dedicated effort. And on the contrary, what I don't see in the investment banking area is that, because this is, you know, that's really, I think, perhaps of all of the discrimination cases that I've had, that's been really the worst, most pervasive industry. And if any industry needs to attack it head on, there's the problem.
Right.
This is where it has to be.
Alan, thank you so much for your call. We appreciate your perspective as a discrimination lawyer. So Katya and Jillian, kind of to that point, to some of those points, you quote one male executive in your article who said he thought about avoiding false accusation of sexual harassment by avoiding one-on-one meetings with junior women or always leaving his office door open, but he landed on a different solution. Quote, just try not to be an asshole. And so do you find in your reporting that many men on Wall Street are asking themselves what it means to be an asshole at work in a different way than before Harvey Weinstein?
I think a lot of them are just really conscious of their behavior now. They're, you know, adding caveats even before they provide a compliment about a coworker's dress or shoes or whatever it may be. I think, you know, I guess you can say asshole on the radio, but we've also tried to censor it to jerk. But I guess, yeah, it's just a very basic instinct. One thing that we've heard people tell us or in conversations come up, they're just trying to treat coworkers with respect behave as they would with their sisters or their wives, or even as they would want someone to treat their daughters, for example, if they have daughters entering the business. It really just shouldn't be that hard. But to the extent it is hard and folks are telling us via email, social media, or other means that it's not easy just to not be a jerk. There's also mm-hmm. a fear that some women will accuse them of things that they don't do or that they then get flagged to HR and then there's investigations with that, which then also taints their own career trajectories. That's another thing that, you know, bears fruit, something to think about. But from our discussions and sort of research, we've learned that there are only roughly 2% of all accusations are false. So generally where there's smoke, there's fire. But yeah, I guess if people can just behave with respect, then there shouldn't really be a need to, I don't know, take these extreme
right.
measures.
Now, false accusations are a concern even for men who do behave appropriately with women colleagues. There's a finding from Slate that maybe you're aware of after the midterm elections last month. It says many Democrats thought the uprising against sexual abuse and harassment would help them. In reality, it seems to have cut both ways. In the AP/Fox exit poll survey, 78% of voters said they were concerned about women not being believed in sexual misconduct cases, but that was almost matched by the 74% who said they were concerned about accused men not getting a chance to defend themselves. So do you think this Mike Pence effect problem has gotten worse, not just since Harvey Weinstein, but also since the Kavanaugh hearings?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, that's what several. While we were doing our research, that was going on, and so it was really heightened, and that was on a lot of people's minds. And I think that, you know, the Kavanaugh hearing is just one of those other monumental moments that have really divided the country and divided the response to it. And that's where it was kind of hard, because a lot of men that we spoke to, and some women too, believed that, you know, that Justice Kavanaugh's, you know, life has been ruined as a result of an unfounded accusation. Whereas other people we talked to, are saying absolutely not. I mean, he's actually, you know, he made it to the Supreme Court. This proves that victims aren't believed, that that men still have the upper hand in terms of being believed, and their lives will go on perfectly fine, whereas, you know, an accuser will spend the rest of their life in hiding and being blackballed on in their career and in life. And that's certainly the case in Wall Street, where, we know lots of stories about women who have just kind of had to, you know, get leave their job in order to continue their work. The man, you know, if he's he gets maybe a payout to leave, but never gets a black mark on his record, because, you know, they're not fired with cause necessarily. And on Wall Street, you have these forced arbitration agreements, so they can never come to light. You have to sign an NDA. A lot of these things, I believe, are changing now, but up till now, that's why there hasn't been a Weinstein of Wall Street. It's not that there isn't one out there. It's that, you know, the system is in place to protect the mm-hmm. institutions and to protect their moneymakers. That's a big thing here.
And we should say that this perception of equal risk of not being believed when you are the victim of sexual harassment or sexual assault and being falsely accused, that, you know, that exit poll found equal concern about both things comes despite FBI stats that say only 8% of sexual assault allegations are false. But that's not the same as perception, and even an 8% risk is enough to generate fear. So then you get these practices. But is there a set of best practices emerging on Wall Street or in corporate America generally to avoid men putting women in vulnerable positions at work, but also protect against misperceptions of misconduct?
So the New York City mayor's office sent us some things which Cartier mentioned earlier. These, I guess, could be considered best practices. It's just if you take out a male colleague, you should take out a female colleague. Even Sheryl Sandberg said this in Lean In, that exposure between men and women should be equal, right? So if men can give guidance to a younger man who maybe reminds them of themselves, why not also impart that on a woman? Give them the space. This is what the mayor's office said. Give them the space to shine, promote them in meetings, and especially among senior management. I think men just need to be conscious that they're not only favoring a junior male, they're also favoring a female, even if she may be attractive, and they're worried that she, I don't know, could accuse them one day of something. They should know that as long as they behave and are never inappropriate or do anything improper, then it should just be very simple.
We're talking with Gillian Tan and Katia Porzakansky, Bloomberg News reporters, about their article on men taking actions to protect themselves from sexual harassment complaints, particularly in Wall Street companies, by not having as many professional contacts with their female colleagues, disadvantaging the women in their careers as a result. And before you go, I'm just curious if either of you are familiar with the other big Wall Street story right now, this Chinese telecom CFO, Meng Wanzhou, a woman, by the way, arrested in Canada at the request of the Trump administration for allegedly having her company violate sanctions on Iran. Does she have any reputation for anything like that, or any reputation in general that either of you know of as finance sector journalists?
So just to be clear, this isn't our area of expertise, but our colleagues have written extensively about it. I'll just jump in to say that we reported right now it's unclear what role Trump played in Meng's arrest or whether he will intervene. So I would just put that out there because you said that he was involved directly.
Well, I said the Trump administration. Is it accurate to say the U.S. government requested that Canada make this arrest?
Yes, it's true, and that the U.S. is seeking extradition of her to the U.S. But I guess, it's hard to tie it exactly to his administration because, anyway, I would just...
Uh-huh. It could be kind of independent from the Justice Department without the White House really having been involved. So, I mean, that raises another interesting possible angle on the story, which is that Trump, just as he's trying to negotiate something with President Xi of China, gets blindsided by this, complicating it.
Yeah, so that is exactly what we have reported, that this arrest sort of threatens to upend the Trump and President Xi trade truce. Obviously, it's been well flagged that Trump has sort of threatened tariffs and other measures against the trade relationship, and as we've seen, shares have reacted very negatively.
Down again? You have it in front of you today, morning?
Right. I do. It's down,
1.8%.
Yeah,
the S&P's about 2% today.
Already. Bloomberg News reporters Gillian Tan and Katia Porzakansky, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Stay with us.